You're listening to another episode of The Zag. Eric DeSoap here, excited to be joined by a 2018 NLC Twin Cities fellow. Juan Murphy is here. We'll catch up with him. It's our second Twin Cities NLC alum we've chatted to. With so much going on in that city, wanted to see firsthand experiences of what's going on and what is likely to happen in the coming weeks and months. Thanks for tuning in. Let's get to it. All right, Juan, what do you feel like people are missing if they're only seeing what's happening in your city on the news? What are you seeing on the ground that you'd want people to know about?
Yeah, I mean, I really want people to know about like just the incredible movement work that's being done here. Is that, you know, we always say that young people are the future. Well, right now we're seeing that young people are the present, people who are leading. There's just a great crew of just incredibly amazing leaders who are Black women, who are leading a great deal of the Black Lives Matter protests across the city, who are leading, the defunding of the police efforts, who are, trying to reform the Minneapolis Police Department. And we're also seeing incredible solidarity. This is the most diverse group of protesters I've ever seen. I was in Baltimore in 2015 during the unrest there, an uprising there after the, the murder of Freddie Gray. And those protests looked, very much one way. And then in the Twin Cities now, we're seeing a great deal of awareness and understanding among different, race groups that generally haven't shown up before. And as an Asian American, as a Vietnamese American, I feel like this is a really strong moment for me and, my community to show solidarity.
And I think people have paid a lot of attention in the last 48 hours to headlines coming out of your city about your city council voting to defund police, and that phrase is I think a phrase people are still learning about what it actually means in practice. How would you describe what the city council did, or what's your understanding of what may happen next?
Yeah, I mean, one thing I want to just make sure that people understand is that I live on the east side of St. Paul, and so we are a twin city, and so we're deeply connected to things happening across the river, and things that impact them will impact us. But I do, everything that I say, they're not my city council, but they're adjacent to my city council. What I would say is that this didn't come out of the blue. This has been something that, folks like Reclaim the Block and, Black Visions Collective have been working towards for a very long time. That, NAACP and Black Lives Matter has been, in having deep engaging conversations about what community and what policing can look like. And it's very clear that, in this country, we have a police that protects and serves some community, and then we have a force that polices other communities. And what I would say when people are talking about defunding the police, some folks are just saying, hey, let's cut the budget, let's have no police, like police abolition. But we also know that that isn't an overnight effort or journey. I'm still figuring out exactly my thoughts on that, just because I'm a details person, I have a policy background, and that's something that I deeply care about. But to me, there's irreparable trust gap between the Minneapolis POCI citizens and the Minneapolis Police Department. Reforms have been tried and they failed. Removing guns wouldn't have saved George Floyd. Having body cams didn't save George Floyd. And I think those are things that we need to be critical of and be thoughtful about. And we need to rebalance the power and the resources in that city, in our city, and in city budgets across the board that we have, similar to the U.S. larger budget around, national defense, where it's a third of the budget, like a large deal, like over two thirds of the budget. When we're talking here in our city budgets, we're spending way too much on police and not enough on community resources that would alleviate the need for police in the first place.
And then in terms of political leadership, are there a significant number of elected positions in your city or the adjacent city that are up in November? Are those off your elections? Like, when is the next time potentially we would see the type of candidates that are running against incumbents show up?
Yeah, I mean, it's a election year, and so the mayors are not up until next year. But I would like to just say that St. Paul recently elected, almost 4 years ago, elected our first person of color mayor in Mayor Melvin Carter. First Black man to ever hold the post and first person of color to ever hold it. Minneapolis is still having some really difficult and frank conversations about what political leadership in their city looks like. But I think there they've been able to make tremendous amounts of history who, they had two trans folks of color win political seats last city council election in Philippe Cunningham and Andrea Jenkins. I think that's a city council that has moved dramatically to the left because of young people and organizing efforts. We've also had folks here in the Twin Cities like Mitra Jolly, who was a NLC founding board member here in St. Paul and is now serving as city council member and was the first, woman of, Korean or Iranian descent to come to that position. And I am currently running for state legislature here in the Twin Cities as well. And if elected, I would be the first person of Vietnamese descent to ever be elected to any office in the state of Minnesota.
When we come back, we'll talk more along about his NLC experience and what it led to professionally for him. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of The Zag. We'll be right back. Yeah, so in 2018, you were an NLC fellow, and part of the institute program that all fellows do is a capstone project. So think, for folks that don't know, an opportunity to put together a bold idea for something professionally or maybe something you want to pursue personally. But for you, it sounded like what you cooked up actually turned into something that is still ongoing. Tell folks about what it came to be.
Yeah, I mean, I was in a different fellowship program where I was really thinking critically about my own space as a person of color and trying to pursue policy work and, really started thinking more critically about what would needed to be done. And so when I became a NLC fellow, my cohort, we were able to kind of just think about like that we wanted to do something more than just a personal project, that we wanted to look at some systemic reform. And so I decided to focus on, for me personally, taking this idea about the idea that people who've experienced foster care like I did could have voice and could decide what policy looks like. As someone who used to work at the Department of Ed under President Obama, I really appreciate the work that we were able to do there. But oftentimes it didn't feel like foster care was even really a priority, that it was an afterthought. And also that, community outreach was not seen as at the forefront, things that I fully own and things that I know I, if I'm ever given the opportunity to serve again, I will try to be better on. So here in the state of Minnesota, so there was not a single organization or person in the state that was working on foster care policy that was led by fosters themselves. And as we know, people who share the identity most harmed or impacted by a system should be the ones to reform it. And so I diligently used my NLC fellowship time to kind of build towards that, do a landscape analysis with a couple of friends, and really just get the ball rolling. And after, the pitch that I use for my capstone is the same pitch that I use for funding to my first foundation. And, 3 years later, we are, I'm employed to other folks and we're showing that young people can lead and it can start with a really bold idea as a, as an NLC capstone.
And then the NLC application is open for folks who are considering the 21 program. Hard to know exactly what that program will look like. We don't know how close or how far apart we'll have to be distance wise, but if you had to give advice to folks who are considering NLC as something for their development, what would you encourage them to prioritize as they made that decision?
Yeah, I mean, really the power for me was were the other fellows. Like with anything, I think what stood out for me was the fellowship, that you were able to connect with people that were, that are willing to challenge your ideas and help you crystallize them. And even though you all knew that you shared similar values, it was just really nice to be in a space where you could have, where you could ambition out loud, where you could challenge power and you could connect with other people who want to do those same things, even if they're in different ways. A lot of folks had political ambition, a lot of folks didn't. And it was just really great to connect with folks. And I would say, if you're looking for a place to make change, joining your local NLC chapter is a great place to start.
Yeah, well said. And folks can check out that application at newleaderscouncil.org. It's open until early September, so you have plenty of time to check it out, and we encourage you to do so. And if you want to know what other folks who've done NLC are up to presently, make sure to check out all past episodes of The Zag. You can find those at all the places you get your podcasts, SoundCloud, Spotify, Stitcher. Download and subscribe. They're all there. And until next time, thanks for tuning in. We'll catch you soon.